Hi, I'm Vanessa Vicaria, aka The Math Guru, and you're listening to Math Therapy, a podcast that helps guests work through their math traumas one problem at a time. Whether you think you're a math person or not, you're about to find out that math people don't actually exist, but the scars that math class left on many of us definitely do. And don't worry, no calculators or actual math were involved in the making of this podcast. Okay, I know I say this every single time, but seriously, I am so excited about this week's episode. Today, we're talking to Jenna, who's actually one of our old students, who is now one of our best tutors. She's a first-gen student, being the very first in her family to attend university, which is so cool. And she's also a person living with ADHD and a variety of learning disabilities, which we'll get into in this episode. She believes in the power of teaching and has a passion for inspiring youth to see math a different way. Jenna has hopes to pursue her interest in graduate school for epidemiology and eventually achieve her goal of becoming a pediatrician, which is a goal she had almost given up on before deciding to give math one last shot. Jenna has such an interesting perspective on learning disabilities and how they can actually help you work to the best of your abilities once you understand them. And what I love so much about Jenna is that she takes absolute pride in the countless times she has failed because she can count the lessons she's learned from them. See what I did there? A little math, guys. It's everywhere. All right, you guys ready? I'm ready. Let's do it. So, welcome to the podcast, Jenna.
Thank you.
Okay, so one of the coolest things about you that I feel like everyone should know right away is that you used to be one of our students.
Yeah, I was.
And you came to us because you were not doing well in math, which we're going to get to. And now you're a tutor here.
Yeah.
Which is like the coolest thing. So, okay, why don't we start by you just telling me, like, what would you say, like, do you consider yourself a math person?
Honestly, if you asked me that, like, 5 years ago, I would have laughed at your face. Because I would have said, like, no, how much I hated math. It was, like, one of the most traumatizing experiences. But that specific question, like, do I consider myself a math person? Even if you asked me for that right now, I wouldn't say yes because I don't think that a math person exists. Mm-hmm. So, like,
I love that answer, yeah. Obviously.
I think that's like a concept that was made up by people to say that, to put you kind of in categories and boxes to say, okay, no, you're a smart person, you're a dumb person, you're a math person, you're an arts person. But the reality is that, you know, it's interfluid. You can be a math person and an arts person if you want to be, but, you know, so do I consider myself a math person? No. But do I like math? Yes. So if I were to answer that, that would be kind of what I would touch on.
Well, that's a great answer. Okay, so tell us about, like, what is your history of math? Like, try it. Like, tell me a bit of the story.
Oof, okay. This is a very long story, and I think it starts all the way back in the third grade. So I remember we were doing place values and number blocks and learning about, you know, the hundredths and the tenths and stuff like that. And I was struggling with it a lot. And so my teacher, being my teacher, decided to pull me to the side and say, hey, you know, you should come to me during recess and let's work on this. And me, you know, I'm a studious student. Like, I like to do my work. So I said, yeah, of course, let's do this. And so she pulled me to the side and she worked with me. And, you know, I didn't get it the first time. I didn't get the second time. I didn't get the third time. And by the time we reached that fourth lesson, she completely gave up on me. So she was like, you know, there's no use in doing this. Stop doing the extra practices during recess. Kind of sat me to the back of the class on the side.
God.
I know. And then just from then on, just like, she basically didn't expect anything of me.
Wow.
So if I failed, great, I get a phone call home. And that was basically it. She didn't really care at the fact that I was failing and I was in the third grade. You know, how do you expect a seven-year-old to fail?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
A seven-year-old, exactly. And I think from then it started slipping. By the time I got to like fourth grade, it got even worse. And because I wasn't doing well, I was very disruptive. So teachers would either move me to the back of the class, or what they would do is they would take my desk and face it away from the class towards the wall right next to the garbage can.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was considered disruptive. And they were like, you're not going to learn anyway, so why should you sit with the other kids
Oh my God. Who
want to learn? But the reality is, I did want to learn. I just couldn't understand it. And, you know, I was showing a lot of these signs of, like, ADHD and learning disabilities, because when you're in the fourth or third grade and you're failing almost every subject, there's an issue that's happening. And then you know, that went up to the eighth grade. In the eighth grade, I think I failed about...
And sorry, just to interrupt, I only want to interrupt to tell our listeners that you're not, like, super old. Like, you're not 50. Like, no. Right? How old are you?
I'm turning 22.
You're turning 22. So this is... Like, not, I mean, it's long ago.
But not that long ago.
No. And I only bring that up because when people, you know, talk about this type of stuff and, like, let's say you're, you know, a bit older, like, we weren't having the discussion around, you know, learning disabilities. And again, it is relatively new, but, yeah, what was it like at the time? Were people talking about it? Was it common? I'm trying to think. That would have been, like, 15 years ago or something, right? Yeah,
15 years ago. Well, at that time, actually, we didn't know that I had a learning disability. I mean, some teachers could guess that I was different, but they didn't really take it upon themselves to tell my parents. And at the same time, like, I don't blame my parents for this, but, you know, they're immigrants, so they don't speak English. Second, they're first, like, they're uneducated. So my mom dropped out of school at 16. My dad dropped out of school at age 11. So they were very young, so they don't know anything about learning disabilities or ADHD. They didn't come from a culture that talked about it. So I don't expect them to know that when I was in the fourth grade.
Right.
But, you know, it was up to the teachers who saw me every single day to warn my parents about this issue and maybe think about, like, some options that we can come up with to help me, but they didn't. So I went through up to grade 8. I failed grade 8. There's, like, 4 sections of math, and I failed 2 of them. So I was forced to go to summer school if I wanted to go into grade 9 math. I, as a kid, always had a dream of, like, being a doctor. So I knew that if I want to be a doctor, I have to do good in math and science. And then I went to grade 9 math, and I tried. It's not like I was one of those kids who didn't want to do anything and didn't listen. I genuinely tried to listen. It was just difficult. And I was picked on a lot in grade 9 by my teacher.
Every year you have had the worst teacher.
Yeah, and in grade 9, she would pick on me. If I was sitting and I was quiet, she would be like, Jenna, shut up.
What?
But I wasn't talking. And all my friends would giggle because they're just like, what is she saying? Jenna's not even talking. And so my
That's
grade...
That's horrible.
It was horrible. My grade 9, I failed math with a 38%, and my teacher gave the mark with a smile, saying, like, this is for you. Maybe you shouldn't consider math. And I was like, you know what, Q? I'm going to go into grade 10 academic math. And that one was even worse because that I was also doing really bad in. And
you're still undiagnosed, right?
This was still undiagnosed. Okay. And she, at the end of the year, made me stand up in front of the whole class, told everyone I failed the course.
What is happening?
And told everyone that, you know, in a way that Jenna was too stupid to process math.
And oh my God, I wish you could see my face right now.
I know, I was so upset. You know, she's like, you should think of applied. And I remember, you know, guidance calling me down once a week being like, you know, you're going to start university in 3 years. You have to start thinking about options. Maybe math and science isn't for you. You should go into the arts. I mean, I like the arts, don't get me wrong. I love it, but I never saw it as a thing for me to do. But they kept forcing me. They were like, drop math and science, drop math and science. And, you know, you think that adults know everything at 15, so you believe them. But for grade 11, I didn't drop anything. I was like, no, I'm going to stick with it. And grade 11, I dropped.
And how are you passing math? Were you going to summer school?
Summer school, night school. Okay. I had to repeat the course 2 to 3 times each time. And even the last time that I passed it would be with a 51%.
Right.
Not a high grade, but 51.
Okay.
And my grade 11, I dropped with an 11%.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was a horrible experience. But that teacher was actually the best teacher I could ever hope for. You know, she genuinely cared. She would sit with me twice a day for an hour to try to teach me math, but, like, I wasn't getting it. And she specifically told me it wasn't because you weren't understanding grade 11 math. It's because your foundations have been so poor that you're not able to support it. Right. And then she told me this analogy that, like, math is like a house. You know, you have the foundation, which is the most important part. She said grade 11 and 12 math is like the pretty little things you decorate the house in. If you don't have the foundation, everything's going to crash.
Yeah.
So she told me maybe it's time to reconsider it and maybe in the future go back to math and see if you really like it. But as of now, she's like, your priorities are to get into university, so let's maybe stay away from it for a little bit, but when you feel more comfortable, come back.
Which is like a much nicer way
of
saying
it. Yes, it's a way much nicer way of saying it. So I love, her name was Miss Selwinska. She's like the sweetest little Polish woman I've ever met. So I really like the fact that she said that. And, you know, I still visit her to this day. Like I go back and I'll tell her, you know, I'm teaching grade 10 math now.
That's funny. My math teacher, who's my best friend now, who changed my life, was also Polish.
Oh, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like very sweet. But I hated it, and I decided, okay, I'm going to go into an arts program, and I did for my first year. I went into political science, and within the first 6 weeks, like, panic attack after panic attack, I hated the program.
And at this point, you're still undiagnosed.
Undiagnosed.
And why? Exactly. Why was that?
Because, well, technically, let me go a little bit back to when I was 15, 16. The guidance counselors actually told me that they noticed a trend that I do actually fit the criteria of a kid with a learning disability and ADHD. But they told me that because I was going to age out of the system in 3 years, it was not worth giving me the test. That test cost $2,000. If the school system was to provide it for me, it would be for free. What? But they don't want to provide it for me because I'm leaving the system in 3 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they actually have a cutoff age at around seven.
Seven? What? Why? There's so much more school left.
I know. But because the test is so expensive, they don't want to give it to kids who are going to age out soon. And if you're...
But how is seven soon? What? Like, this is insane.
I know. And to be... Like, the waiting list of it is about 2 to 3 years. So if you are a six-year-old kid and you're waiting for this test, it's 2 to 3 years. You can take the test outside of school if you want to, but you're paying close to $2,000 to $3,000. And I didn't have that money. Wow. And my parents can't afford that. They're working, you know, our household is kind of low to medium mm-hmm. income. Like, and I have two other siblings.
I mean, and that's like, that's really expensive.
Expensive,
just like
regardless.
Yeah.
You know, if you can afford it, by all means do it.
But sure, yeah.
People like me, like we couldn't afford that. And I had bigger things to think about, like, how am I going to pay for university?
Right, yeah.
So my first year went undiagnosed again. I dropped out of the program. I went to this little leadership thing, and that place really changed me and saw that, you know, like, I really want to be a doctor. And I decided maybe I should go into psychology and start taking some math, start taking some sciences and going back to it, which was really scary for me. I decided to make a change to go to a new university to start fresh because it was just like after having panic attack after panic attack, you just don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
So I left. And it was actually because of my therapist who looked back into my childhood, noticed that there was an irregular pattern and told me that I should go get tested specifically for ADHD, which I did at 20. I'm 22 now. And Ryerson, because I was a student who came from a family that needed, like, who had a low priority income, they said that because I'm on OSAP and because our income is so low that they're willing to give me a grant that I had to fill out a whole application for. So it's all thanks to Ryerson that I was able to actually get the testing that
wow.
I needed. Yeah. And so when I actually did the test, it wasn't just ADHD that popped out. It was multiple other learning disabilities, which kind of worked side by side, mm-hmm. which made math very difficult.
Can you tell us about, like, some of them?
Yeah. So ADHD, as you know, is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So there's a lot of... The thing about ADHD looks different for people. Like, for me...
I heard it's... Like, I mean, from a lot of the research I've done and what I've heard is it presents differently in boys
exactly.
and girls.
Yeah. So, the statistics are that boys are 2 times overdiagnosed than females.
Mm.
And females, don't quote me, are about 2 to 4 times less diagnosed than
we
males.
We don't have to quote you. You're saying it on...
Exactly.
On. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I've heard something like that,
yeah,
too. Like, it's so,
so
underdiagnosed.
For boys, the median age of getting diagnosed, the mean is about 6 to 7, because they portray lots of hyperactivity, like, and
yeah.
tend to get very violent, fighting and stuff like that. They assume immediately that it's ADHD. Females actually don't get diagnosed till they're 19, on average, because we don't display a lot of aggression. We tend to be extremely unfocused.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really sexist about it is that teachers, when you go to interviews, will say, "Oh, you know, your child is just lazy. They're not paying attention. They're more focused on boys," but I wasn't focused on boys.
Right.
Like, where are you getting this information
yeah.
from? And, you know, my parents didn't believe that either, because when I was at home, I was, as of like a 12, 11-year-old kid, working 6 hours to just try to finish my homework.
Well, there's a lot of stuff, too, that's, like, really interesting about teachers and sort of, like, not even teachers, like, parents, too, just society, like, praising boys for being, like, super hyper, right? Like, oh, it's kind of okay. Like, that means they're kind of smart and they're just all over the place because they're so creative. Whereas if a girl displays something similar... Exactly. She's being lazy or distracting just because that's how the stereotype goes.
Exactly.
And also there's a lot to show that for girls, ADHD presents in the same way as like depression and anxiety, right?
Yeah. And we're very unfocused. So, you know, we might be listening, but we're actually not listening.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're glazing back and forth. We might be a little bit more calm. For example, my hyperactivity tends to be in talking. So I talk a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's how I display it. I did display more hyperactivity than normal for females, so tend to talk a lot, disrupt a lot, but I was, because of the fact that I knew how to work the system at school and basically get my way to graduate, no one really suspected it as a as an actual thing. They assume you either have to be, like, perfect or you have to be completely out of control to, like... You know, there's no, like...
It's like being a functional alcoholic or something.
Exactly. Like, it's just... It was very difficult. But for me, as I said, that's how ADHD presents. With learning disabilities, I have a condition called working memory disorder, which really played in for math. And what that means is what working memory does is that, for example, if I'm studying for something and I do a test, the information is in my brain. I just can't regurgitate it. So I can't put it on paper... without having an aide next to me. And an aide doesn't have to be formulas or literally written out word by word textbook definitions. It could be a picture of a bird, and that will ignite my memory to remember the things that I was studying about. It's very weird. But because I wasn't given that aide as a kid, when it came to tests, I was struggling because I couldn't regurgitate the information. So I wouldn't even complete 75% of the test because I wasn't able to. I knew the information, but I wasn't able to. And I remember this one time, one of my teachers decided to just give me a verbal test, and I got 100% on it.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. And it was actually a math test, interestingly enough.
That's so fascinating.
But they didn't really take it into consideration. They were just like, oh, it's, you know, it's just a one-off thing. And another thing is visual spatial awareness. So when teachers did a lot of charts or did, for example, in grade three, when I was talking about those number blocks, I can't visually understand it. So when... they bring out these intense, especially grade 11 biology, these intense charts, I'm not able to process it. So put that plus ADHD plus a working memory problem, and it's like a recipe of disaster. But, like, I didn't even think that I had all that. I knew something was different.
Well, like, how would you know, right?
Exactly.
Like...
I knew something was different, but I would never guessed ADHD. Because if you told me I had ADHD, I would have laughed because I'm like, oh, no, I'm not. Hyperactive. I'm not like this, you know, because I have that stereotype of what boys are like in my head that I just never assumed it. But yeah, that's basically what those conditions are that I have.
So once you got diagnosed with all of that, how did that change things?
It changed everything. I took about a semester off from school to really understand how to learn with it. And Ryerson offers really, really amazing support for students with disabilities. They have these learning support, academic support people who actually specialize in this. And they actually teach you how to note take with your disability.
So that's the whole thing, right? Is there strategy? It's like just like any sort of like therapy or like all those self-help books that are like, get to know this and that about yourself. Like once you do, you can work with it. It's not like you're getting diagnosed. I think a lot of people have the misconception that like, being diagnosed with a learning disability gives you an excuse to underperform, and that's not at all it.
No. In matter of fact, it was exactly the opposite. It gave me more of a drive to learn how to be the best that I can be. And one of the ladies at Ryerson taught me this really cool trick called mnemonics, which is what I was talking about with the picture of the bird. Mnemonics is either like, for example, in music, you have scales and, you know, every good boy deserves fudge. Like, that's a mnemonic. She taught me how to do that, and with our cue sheets for people who have working memory disorders, we get one little sheet where we get to write information, and it has to be in mnemonics. That mnemonic sheet from the grades that I was receiving, which were like 50 to 60% of tests, were going up to an 80%. So it changed my mark by 20, 25%.
Wow.
Which is a lot. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So, wow, we could like talk about this forever.
I know.
But so moving on to the next phase, how did you come to us? Like, I'm trying to even remember.
So I remember I saw an ad on social media that said math anxiety workshop. And I was like, what the hell is that? and I read on it and I looked more at the math guru and I was like, people were giving like 5 out of 5 rating. And it wasn't like, you know, like when you look at ratings, sometimes there's like 2 ratings and it's 5 out of 5 yeah. and then people don't say anything and you're like, that's sketchy.
Yeah. Super sketchy. Yeah, it's like the owner and like the one person.
Yeah,
for.
Exactly. So I thought, oh my God, is that something like this? But there's like over 80 reviews with all 5 out of 5. So that's not possible.
I paid every single one of those people.
Okay. Yeah. So I like look through and everyone was like, oh, you know, this place is amazing. So there was that workshop and I decided to email you and I didn't really think about getting math lessons until like I started talking to you and I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should try it. So I decided to do that and I decided to come once or twice a week here and you set me up with Lindsay. I love Lindsay.
Who's now your best friend.
Who's my best friend now. I know, I love her so much. At that time I was still like, that's, I think, the time that I was going to second year. So I was like 18, 19. And so I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to do this. So I decided to like save up the money that I was having from work to like come here and pay for tutoring. And honestly, it was the best decision I've ever made. Lindsay really broke things down for me. I mean, it was awkward at first because I was 18, 19 years old learning, you know, grade 9 math, which is really weird. Like, I didn't know what fractions were. And that's, like, very embarrassing for me to, like, think that I didn't know that at 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
But
so many people don't.
Exactly.
Really, actually.
But it's just embarrassing to think that, you know, you're at that age, you're in university, and you don't know how to do basic math. But Lindsay was understanding, and, you know, she didn't judge me. I've been to other tutoring places before. You know how they give you that smirky eye?
Yeah.
They just, like, look at you, and you're just like, why? Like, you're trying to help me. But Lindsay was really understanding, and within 2 months, we learned everything we need to learn from grade 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Wow.
Yeah, so everything. And I mean, if I can learn all that within 2 months, it's not because I was stupid.
Yeah.
It was because I wasn't getting the right type of tools mm-hmm. that I needed to learn. And so Lindsay did that for me, and I thought that was super amazing. And so I continued with her. And then...
so now you're in your psychology program.
Yeah, I'm in my psychology program. Exactly.
And then I remember Lindsay being like, if we need an elementary tutor, I think this Jenna girl would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because you have so much experience with kids and you're so understanding. And now you're tutoring grade 10 math with us.
Yeah. I started off with grade 8 math. And I remember my first session with my first student. I still remember who she is. And I remember leaving that session so worried because it was grade 8 math. I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with these blocks. And I was like, I'm going to be the worst tutor ever. And then, you know,
you're
I started
best.
Doing it and really loved it.
So from failing grade 8 math to tutoring up to grade 10.
Grade 10, exactly.
So tell us, like, what role would you say failure has had? I mean, there have been so many times you failed.
Yeah.
Did you ever want to, like, fully give up?
You know, there were times that I did want to give up, and I did. So it's not like... I try. There were times that I did give up. You know, you're 15, 16 years old and people are telling you, the people that you trust are telling you you're stupid. Well, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, teachers are telling you you're stupid. Guidance counselors don't have any belief in you. You know, a lot of people didn't even think I was going to go to university. You know, they like, to be realistic, people would have thought that I would dropped out of college or like dropped out of mm-hmm. high school. When I was a kid, you know, when people did group assignments, I was always the last one to be picked because no one wanted to be with the stupid kid because like you're not going to be doing any work.
So how have you maintained like such a positive attitude? Or like were there times where you didn't have, just because I know you now and you're so positive and I mean you're so kind not only with other students but like it seems like you have a really optimistic outlook.
I think that came later on once I've graduated. What's really interesting and funny enough, in high school, like my last year, I graduated with great marks. You know, I ended up class valedictorian, which is what people didn't expect of a girl who was failing almost every subject. I think it was afterwards when I started to get to know myself better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I came here, like, what was really great was that this one wasn't just like a math session. It was very therapeutic. It was like getting over kind of that trauma that I had for 12 years of, you know, not liking school. I always knew that, like, I've always wanted to go into academia and higher level professions. But because of, like, what I've experienced in the school system, you know, I didn't want to do that. And I think, like, that strength that I get is from my parents. You know, they weren't fortunate enough to have an education. And, you know, the only reason why they came here is so that we can have that education, you know. And I didn't want to give up on them and be like, oh, sucks to suck, I'm not going to college or university. So I guess, like, they're kind of like the thing that really helped me, you know, be strong about it. But, you know, there are times that I did give up. Like, in 16, like, you know, I developed depression because of it. And I was very, like, upset. But, you know, looking at what other people have done, you know, who've failed, like Einstein has failed multiple times, like more times than you can even imagine.
Well, and I think it's so cool that you, so now not only are you teaching math, which is so cool because it does remind me of my own story as well, of like, you know, through that failure, learning not only more about yourself, but what about how to prevent that from happening to other people.
Exactly.
But you are also working with Jack.org and doing a lot around learning disabilities and mental health as well.
Yeah. So with Jack.org, what's so amazing is that they give a platform for youth to be able to talk about that story. And I do share that story. And I'm so grateful that I've been able to share it to over 20 to 25,000 kids across Canada.
Wow, that's crazy.
Specifically in Ontario. Yeah. And I'm really grateful for that. And I'm really grateful that I'm able to share that story with the kids here at the math group, because, you know, the students that I work with do have learning disabilities and ADHD, mm-hmm. who have, in the seventh grade, given up already on themselves because of the condition that they have. And what's even worse, specifically for boys, is because they have that hyperactivities, teachers actually give up on them quicker. And I've had a grade five kid who came in with his, you know, with his parents, who cried and said, you know, Jenna, they're bullying me. My teachers are bullying me. And, like, for me, that was really emotional because I was bullied 10 years ago before that kid, you know? So
what can parents, like, do? Like, you know, what are things they can do in order to help identify learning disabilities?
So that's a very, it's very difficult because it can look different.
Right. But like asking, like you were saying before.
Yeah, like if you notice patterns that, in, especially in the third or fourth grade, and your child is doing really poorly, I mean, not in just one subject, mm-hmm. in multiple subjects. I mean, the third grade children should not be failing, mm-hmm. you know, math. That's not normal, considered normal. If you notice that, you know, the grades are slipping, and it's not just because, you know, they decided that they don't want to do any work. It's they're trying, but they can't maintain that average. If you notice that, you know, their behavior changes at school, you know, those are signs that are really important to be careful of and to be aware of, that, you know, is this because your child is just doesn't want to do the work, or is there something more? Because for me, they were always like, oh, she's just so lazy. But my parents were like, what are you talking about? She's at home for 6 hours a day sitting and trying to do the work. Mm-hmm. So how is a child who's doing 6 hours of work a day at age nine failing? That shouldn't be the case.
Right. So yeah, okay, I think that's really helpful because, as you said, like, it's hard to spot, but looking into it, talking to teachers, talking to guidance counselors, I mean, at this point, there's still such a lack of familiarity, but there's so much more familiarity. There's so many more resources. So I think that's really helpful. And I guess, you know, like, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, because it's such a personal story, but it's so cool, I think, to, like, see not only that you overcame it, but now you're kind of giving back to make sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen to other kids. So my last question before I get to the final two questions is, how do you think all of this informs your teaching? Like, when you're tutoring, what are things you try to do?
So I try to change up my lesson plan accordingly to the child. So if my child is more hyperactive, I'm not going to sit at a desk with them for an hour straight and do math. That's not okay, because they're going to fidget. So what I would do is I would get up. We would walk around, or maybe we'd do math on the board. What I've noticed is, especially kids who tend to be more tend to be very energized, like to go and write on the board more, because they're getting up and they're moving. I always make sure that the students are getting breaks. You know, especially if you have a student with ADHD, do not go 16 minutes straight. Break down that time. If they do good work for 15 minutes and you notice that their mind is slipping a little bit, and the way you would notice that is if they start asking you random questions. You know, you're doing math and they're like, oh, Jenna, did you know that cars can do this and this and this? You know, you start to notice that their mind is slipping away from math. So maybe you would take, you would tell them, okay, you know, finish this question. And if you finish it, we can talk about cars for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Give them that 2 minute break to be able to talk about it and then go back into math.
How important do you think it is for teachers to be trained? Like, should teachers have an understanding of all these, you know, kind of every learning disability and what to look for?
Definitely. I mean, not to the T of knowing how a disability. You're not able to do that. But, you know, being aware of the signs, because specifically children like me who don't have educated parents, who are immigrants, who don't speak English, we don't have as many resources as other kids who are privileged enough to have parents who speak English,
mm-hmm.
or to even have parents who graduated high school.
Well, and I'll say even that aside, I've spoken to a lot of parents who, you know, have, you know, are born here,
yeah.
are well-versed in English, but still just aren't informed about this, right? Like, it's like, you know, a lot of people have no understanding
of what it is.
Of what it is. I remember I gave a talk at a school, and there was, you know, in a very good neighborhood with, like, kids that we would tutor, and the dad was like, I keep hearing about anxiety, and, like, I know I'm supposed to just, like, get on board and understand it's a thing, but he was like, I don't get this. Like, what? You know, like, he just, like, had never really heard of it and didn't understand what it was and would have no clue how to spot it because he doesn't really believe it's a thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of that where parents don't believe it's a thing.
Yeah.
So even if, let's say, a teacher does bring it up, a parent would be like, that's not real.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a thing. But reality is, it is an actual thing.
Right. And since we are, you know, since this is a podcast about math therapy,
yeah.
like, it's the amount of trauma that can cause, like, thinking about how you said the part of what we did here was get rid of your math trauma, that idea of, like, not being diagnosed and then feeling like there's something inherently wrong with you that you don't know what it is, like, and then this leading to a lifetime of all of this happening to you
yeah.
would be really emotionally scarring. So it
yeah.
is quite important to figure out what's going
Definitely.
On.
Definitely. And even therapists have mentioned and psychologists have mentioned that the development of the anxiety that I had was due to the fact that I was not diagnosed
right.
as a child, and going through all that trauma actually heightened my anxiety
right.
in math specifically. And other subjects, but math specifically. And, you know, that's a really bad thing. You know, as a person who wanted to go into STEM, I wasn't able to, you know, and I
kept... Yeah, like, had they kind of diagnosed it would have prevented, like, the development of further sort
exactly.
of...
Exactly.
...trauma. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to ask... I mean, I literally could talk about you.
Yeah.
talk about you forever, because it's so interesting. But we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask you the final two questions I ask everyone. So the first question is, if there was one thing you could change about the way math is taught, what would it be?
So what I would actually do is, what's really important is not the subject itself, but incorporating kind of that patience and kindness into lessons. When we look at teaching styles, especially with math, it's very rigid. It's very like 2 + 2 = 4, repeat it again. And for some students, you know, that doesn't work, specifically with, like, ADHD kids. You can't work with them
right.
like that. And a lot of them, it's a confidence thing. You know, for me, especially when I was in grade 10 math, you know, and I didn't know fractions. Like, I was too embarrassed to ask her to
mm-hmm.
be like, can you repeat this concept to me because I don't understand it, which then furthered me even more. So it's, you know, really, really being more compassionate towards your students, especially students that you see are struggling. You know, it doesn't mean they're bad kids or bad people. They just are different. They might need different types of support than others. So I think that's the one thing it would really change, specifically about math education.
I love it. That's a great answer. Okay, and the next question is, what would you say to someone who doesn't think that they're a math person?
Ooh, as I said in the beginning,
yes, yes.
There is no such thing as a math person. And I'm, you know, for that person, I would say that I'm really sorry that people have made you believe that a math person exists and you have to be that way. And I'm sorry that, you know, intelligence is incorporated one way, either you get it or you don't. And if you don't get it, you're stupid, which is not the truth. And I'm really sorry for students. I feel really bad because, you know, like, it's a stigmatizing culture and, you know, they have to go through it for 12 years and it gets worse and worse. It's not getting better.
Yeah.
It's getting worse.
Well, even like most adults I know just say they're not math people, right? Yeah. They have that same idea.
It's not even just being a math person. It's just like the competition is getting worse and worse every year for university. The average point, grade average of getting in is getting higher and higher. Mm-hmm. And when students are not reaching a 90%, they think that they're not good at that subject, which is really crazy. And, you know, for me, one really, really important thing is, you know, like, as I said, like, I love Einstein and he had this one amazing quote and he even had it tattooed on my body, which that's why it's so important to me, is that failure is success in progress, and that if you fail once, it doesn't mean you're going to fail forever. It's a stepping stone. You know, you may fail once and you might learn from that. And do it again, and you might fail again, but you learn something else. And incorporating that, I mean, with me and teaching, you know, I wasn't the best right away. You know, I learned some things, and I learned some tools, and I incorporated that. So I think, like, failures help us, and, you know, anyone's able to accomplish any goal that they want to do. If you want to be a doctor, go for it. If you don't like math and you want to be a musician, go for it. Like, that's okay, too, if you don't want to do math. But don't think you can't do it just because you're not succeeding at the great expectation of a system that is absolute shit, to be honest.
Mic drop. You can't drop this mic, actually. It's quite stable and you're not holding it.
No, like, the system wasn't made for people who think outside of the box. It was made for...
Okay, that could be, like, literally a whole other episode. We can discuss that.
Yeah. But, you know, don't be afraid to do what you want to do. You know, sometimes it's all about the right tools. So, you know, if you notice that you're failing, you know, what could we do to help you? And, you know, I think that one really important thing is that there is no math person, but there is a you. So if being you is the best that you can ever be. So don't be a math person, be yourself, you know, and just believe in yourself.
God, this
and
do is it. So I know.
But I think that's the most important thing, is that, you know, believe in you, don't believe in math people.
Bam. You should get that tattooed. Okay. Now I don't know why I keep saying we and us. I always like to give a prescription to my guests. So I think, I mean, there's been so much here you've touched on, and there's so much you're already doing, and you're working through your math traumas. And I feel like part of what's actually help you not overcome, but like manage your trauma and get to a great place is helping others, like this being in service to others. So I was thinking maybe we could do something with you going back to your like high school.
Yeah, totally. Like, I actually, funny enough, I was thinking about that. You know, that's where, especially at high school, is where all of the problems specifically with math started. So if I can even offer once a week to students, you know, math tutoring, specifically because that area in which my school is a high priority school. So a lot of those students can't afford tutoring services.
That's amazing.
So if I can even just offer 1 to 2 hours a week and help a student who might be struggling a lot, you know, that would be awesome and really help.
That's incredible. Okay, that is the best prescription. And we'll definitely follow up with you and see how that goes. And I think that's incredible. And I think that also is something to remember, like, not, I mean, it has nothing to even do with math, but it kind of does, but that idea of getting over, not getting over, but, like, you know, helping, healing your trauma by healing the trauma of others, and that's kind of what, you know, that's why we're kind
of all on the planet. If I can stop it for someone else, that makes me feel better.
This has been such an amazing, amazing interview. Thank you so much, Jenna.
Thank you.
And it was great having you, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, cool. Jenna, such an inspiration. Seriously, guys, there was so much amazing stuff in this app, but if you take one thing away, it's that failure is something that can inform you more than success ever will. I know it's cliche and like every single person's talking about failure, but I truly encourage you guys to do something with your failure starting right now. The next time you fail, and I mean fail at anything, like losing your keys, losing your job, losing your wife, your husband, whatever, I want you to make a list of what lessons you've learned. Like one thing at least that for sure that failure has taught you. Because guys, learning means you're living, and that is the gift that failure just keeps on giving us time after time. Jenna did go back to her high school as per her prescription, and you can check out the results on our website where we put all of our show notes, themathguru.ca/maththerapy. Remember to follow us on all social media at The Math Guru for more of everything. That's where we post extra episode-related content every single week. And of course, a reminder that Math Therapy is hosted by me, Vanessa Vicaria, produced by Sabina Wax, and edited by David Kochberg. Oh, and our theme music, that's Waves by Goodnight Sunrise, which also happens to be my band. As usual, if you know someone who needs math therapy or needs to hear someone else getting math therapy, please share this podcast and please consider writing a review on iTunes. Those two things actually make such a big difference. I'm determined to change the culture surrounding math and I need your help because I know you want it changed too. So spread the word. That's all for this week. Stay tuned for our next episode out next Thursday. Bye-bye.